medical examiner on loan from the state of Montana. It's something our neighbors from the north did as a courtesy in the depths of the Wyoming winter when the hour and 45-minute trip from Billings compared favorably with the 5.5 hours from Cheyenne. Bill McDermott had changed since the last time I'd seen him. He looked worldlier and more affluent, which is what 3 months in Europe with Lana Baroja could do for you. When are you going to make an honest woman out of Lana? She doesn't want to be an honest woman. He took a sip of his ginger ale and glanced at Henry, who stood quietly against the wall with his arms folded. Bill turned back and smiled at me, his long, blondish hair hanging in front of his face. I heard your daughter's getting married.
I heard that, too.
I gestured back toward Geo Stewart's body. Was that the leg that had the untied boot? Both Isaac and the Montana M.E. nodded. Why inject him behind the knee if indeed someone did? Isaac placed his hands in the pockets of his lab coat. Closest point to the major artery in the leg, and it's possible that it would go unnoticed. So you're saying somebody murdered him? McDermott was cautious. We're saying it's possible that somebody murdered him.
With what?
Air. I walked over and leaned against the wall beside Henry. I thought that only worked in made-for-TV movies. Isaac decided to take up some of the slack for Bill. Depends on the condition of the victim, body position, and most important, the amount of air introduced into the system. It's been reported in some medical journals that as little as 20 milliliters could do the trick, but that's still quite a bit of air. The Cheyenne Nation's voice rumbled beside me.
You would need a bicycle pump.
That, or a veterinary syringe, with something along the size of equine dosage. Isaac looked down at the dead man. Despite the uncertainties, air embolism has served as a reasonably dependable method of execution for quite a while. In my home country, I was confined first for being a Jew and then for refusing to assist in the gassing of mental patients. Psychiatric institutions were ordered to continue so-called mercy killings by less conspicuous means. I was told there was a program described as wild euthanasia, which began at the Meseritz Oberwalder Hospital in 1942. While most of the murders were carried out with overdoses of sedatives, some patients were injected with air, which usually killed them within minutes.
Would you need any medical knowledge to do this?
The doc glanced up at me. Helpful, but not necessary.
Chapter 8. When I got back to the office, I saw that Sizer Batoria's vehicle was backed up to the service entrance. I'd put him in charge of collecting and then unloading Duane's illegal 4-H project. Hey, Duane? He looked up from behind the bars of his holding cell as I limped in with the last few plans. Vic closed the heavy door, took the plans from my hands, and disappeared.
You gotta watch him in a cold like that, it'll kill him.
I'm sorry to say, but for our purposes it doesn't matter if the plants are dead or alive. I pulled a folding chair over and sat on my good cheek.
Duane, I hate to add to your miseries, but I need to ask you some questions. Depending on whether I'm satisfied with your answers, I can either charge you here in county, hand you over to DCI or to the feds, or not likely to let you off with a stint picking up trash along the side of the roads in an orange jumpsuit.
He continued to study the concrete floor and then mumbled a response.
Yeah.
Vic returned and leaned against the wall. I looked back at Duane. Whose idea was the marijuana?
Mine.
I shot a glance at Vic, who rolled her eyes and waited a moment. You sure?
Yeah.
Duane, do you know what the sentencing guidelines are for this kind of distribution activity?
I wasn't distributing it.
I took my hat off and held it between my knees by the brim. My deputy, Mr. Sizer Batoria, spoke with the Powder River Co-op folks earlier this morning, after we did a little trash pull out at your place, and they said your electric bill for the last 6 months has been over $750 a month. I took a deep breath and tried to explain the hopelessness of his situation. Duane, possession with intention to distribute is not a specific intent crime. The quantity alone proves intent to deliver. The state of Wyoming doesn't need to prove specific intent with this amount of marijuana. Knowingly possessing this quantity is a prima facie case.
He looked at me blankly.
We use a lot of electricity, watching TV and stuff.
Vic suppressed a guffaw as I continued. Duane, I'm afraid there isn't a court in the land that would believe that even two Olympic-grade hopheads such as you and Gina could possibly smoke that much dope.
Gina don't smoke it. Just me.
I dropped my hat for dramatic effect. Duane, I like you, and I want you to listen very carefully to what I say next. I don't want you to be guilty of all this stuff alone.
Vic stepped from the wall and trailed an arm onto the bars.
Let me tell you, shitbird, I have heard some really lame-ass alibis in my life, but saying that you personally rocked the ganja to the tune of this much gear per annum is the worst alibi I've ever heard.
It's true. It fucking sucks.
He started looking like he might cry.
It's true.
It, she repeated, fucking sucks.
I retrieved my hat and stood, smiling at the young man to give him a little reassurance. I've got a couple of other things to attend to, Duane, but then I'm going to come back, and you and I are going to have another conversation. A conversation where you're not so completely guilty. Okay? He gathered a little fortitude and smiled back.
Okay.
Vic joined me as I walked around the corner, past the two Polaroids of our guests that were used to remind the staff that we actually had somebody in the holding cells. She studied me.
Business is picking up?
Yep. We turned the corner and looked in on Ozzie Dobbs, Jr., who was still in his bloody clothes and was standing by the bars with his face pressed between them.
How's it going, Ozzie?
I want to press charges.
I nodded. You were pretty upset about killing Gio last night.
Yeah, but now that he's okay, I want to press charges.
It appeared that last night's repentance was limited. What leads you to believe that he's okay? Ozzie Dobbs was the perfect picture of someone who had just had the bottom dropped out from beneath him.
He's not?
He died last night, Ozzie. He tried to make it back home in the snow and had a heart attack. Now we're not sure if it was the beating, the exertion, or something else. But Gio Stewart is dead. I stepped over to our little kitchenette and pulled a mug from the stack and turned it over. You want a cup of coffee, Ozzie? He blinked, and then looked at the two of us.
You guys are kidding, right?
I stood there for a moment, wondering if more coffee was really going to help. Not about the coffee, I'm not. He swallowed and nodded his head quickly.
I would love a cup of coffee.
I turned over another for myself and looked at Vic, who shook her head. I poured myself a cup and then one for him. I was guessing, but he didn't stop me from adding cream and sugar. I handed it through the bars, and he took it like a serum.
Gio's dead?
Yep.
Oh, God.
I leaned against the bars and couldn't help but reassure the man. If it makes you feel any better, and I'm breaking a number of laws myself by saying this, the beating may have been an aggravating factor, but I don't think you killed him.
He crossed back to the bunk and sat without looking at me.
You're just saying that to make...
No, I'm not. Now, I don't know how current you are on the situation with the Stewart family and your own, but I'm going to need some answers from you about everything that you might know. He stared at the floor and then slumped with resignation.
I'll tell you everything I know, but can I get a shower? I'm worried that all this blood might be giving me AIDS.
I stared at him. You weren't all that concerned last night, when you took the time to finish off a fifth of tequila.
I wasn't in my right mind then.
Vic's eyes narrowed, and the iridescence was like a solar flare.
No shit, little beaver.
Put your mind at rest, Ozzie. If Gio was HIV positive, Doc Bloomfield would have told us by now. He didn't say anything more, and I figured after all he'd been through that it was the least I could do for him. But I'll get you downstairs for a shower. Vic pushed off the counter and started toward the hallway.
If you can get through there without a machete, the basement looks like the Jamaican Botanical Gardens.
Sancho says it's British Columbia, bud.
Whatever.
Ozzie's voice carried after us.
Hey, Walt, can you ask my mother to bring me some clean clothes?
When I got to the hallway outside my office, Vic was waiting for me on the other side of my open doorway.
Mrs. Dobbs already came by with his things, but she doesn't want to see him.
Great, we'll just round up all the idiots and send the whole damn bunch off to Rawlins. I sounded a little fed up, even to me, and then noticed the odd expression on Vic's face.
What?
She nodded to the open doorway between us.
She's here, in your office, right now.
I tried to exude an aura of blustering professionalism as I entered, tossed my hat onto my desk, and pulled out my chair. Hello, Mrs. Dobbs. She'd made herself at home and taken off her coat, the shopping bag with her son's clothes sitting on the corner of my desk.
I suppose I'm one of the idiots you're wanting to send off to Rawlins.
I sat and looked at her. Not specifically. I hear you don't want to see Ozzy, but I think he needs your support right now.
Walter, this was a completely unprovoked attack, and a man I cared a great deal for is dead.
This is your son we're talking about. She sighed audibly through her nose.
All the more reason.
I thought about the emotional linchpin that the entire episode hung upon, and figured that if I could get her to focus, maybe we could avoid all of this. Mrs. Dobbs, is this the first time that your son has found out about, known for sure that you... I waited for her to provide the rest so that I wouldn't have to come across with a more palatable version of stooping the junk man.
That I what, Sheriff?
I was going to have to come across with a more palatable version of stooping the junk man. Is this the first indication that your son might have had, concerning the intimacy between the deceased and yourself? She stared at me.
I don't see what that has to do with the matter at hand.
If I'd still been holding my hat, I most certainly would have dropped it. Well, I think it has everything to do with it. I took a deep breath and let it out slowly, the way I always did when I was afraid I was going to say something I might regret later. Betty, can't you see how this might raise something of an emotional response in your son?
Not to the point of beating someone to death.
Well, we're still not sure that that's what killed Gio. Her voice elevated just a touch.
I'm surprised at you, Walter.
I leaned back in my chair and wedged my good foot under my desk, this time trying to take the weight not only off the not-quite-healed broken bone in my foot, but the still sore bite in my right butt cheek. Her arms remained folded, and I felt like I was once again in the 9th grade. If your son is charged, it'll be for murder.
Yes.
I leaned forward, trying to convey the seriousness of the subject, even though I doubted Ozzy would have to do more than pay some heavy court and lawyer fees and do community service. It was also possible that he and Duane would be picking up trash on the sides of the county roads in matching orange jumpsuits. Which means he'll go to Rawlins.
Yes.
Prison, I paused. Probably for the rest of his life.
She didn't pause. Yes.
Her head nodded slightly, and it appeared as if she was agreeing with herself.
I understand, Walter, but I just don't see anything else for it.
My mouth closed for a moment in hopes that some sanity might creep into the conversation, and I could just feel the beginnings of another of my headaches coming on. I was saved by the red light that began blinking on my phone and snatched up the receiver.
Yes. Scott Montgomery on line one.
I made a face, even though I was glad for the interruption.
Who? The sheriff of Travis County, Texas?
Oh, right. I placed the receiver against my chest and looked at Betty Dobbs. Will you please consider what I've said, Mrs. Dobbs? She stood and shrugged on her coat. She tapped the bag on my desk.
These are Ozzy's things.
I'll see that he gets them. She nodded once with her chin, turned, and started to leave.
Walter?
Yes, ma'am. She stood with her back to me.
Are you aware that your door does not have a doorknob?
Yes, ma'am. She stood there for a moment more and then continued out. Hoping for a sane person, I raised the receiver to my ear and punched line one. Hello?
Sheriff Longmire, Sheriff Montgomery here. I bet you don't remember me.
He was right. Have we met?
Why, yes, at the Doolittle Raiders reunion in San Antonio a few years ago. You escorted Lucian Connolly down here, and we were both on that flight with the crew of the B-25, the Yellow Rose, let him take the stick.
I vaguely remembered a heavy-set man who was wearing a very large palm-leaf hat, who said that he was also a sheriff. I also remembered thinking we were all going to die that day.
Do you have a mustache?
I do. Hey, if you and Mr. Connolly ever make it back down this way, we'll be sure to show you Yankees a good time.
He paused to take a breath.
They were looking to do one of the reunions down here at Austin Bergstrom International, but we got beat out by Dallas. Hey, do you have any say in the committee that selects the locations for the reunions?
No, I'm afraid that I...
That's too bad, because we sure would like for somebody to put in the good word for us. Have you ever been to Austin?
Well, no.
It's a great town. You'd love it. We'd put on a heck of a show for them down here. Everything's bigger in Texas.
The man's enthusiasm was contagious, and I found myself nodding at the receiver.
Sheriff Montgomery, I was wondering if...
Scott, just call me Scott.
I nodded some more. Scott, I was wondering if you'd had a chance to take a look at that bench warrant that you have out on Felix Polk.
Vic came in and sat in the chair that Betty Dobbs had vacated. She leaned forward and poked through Ozzie Jr.'s clothes. He rustled some paper.
I'm looking at this fax your dispatcher sent down. We had a flood in the basement about 10 years ago, and this warrant is so old. What is it you'd like to do about this, Sheriff?
I cleared my throat, and Vic looked up at me.
Drop it.
The response was immediate.
Consider it done.
Simple as that? He laughed.
Walt, I'll be honest with you. This is a B&E that's over 40 years old.
He breathed into the phone, and I wondered what the temperature was in Austin, Texas. He spoke again, and this time his tone was a little more serious.
This fellow a good guy?
Seems like.
How'd he come up on your radar?
We found his thumb out at the dump. Seems he pinched it off in a log splitter. We ran the partial fingerprint through and got nothing, but his connection to you guys came up with his name.
He get it put back on?
The thumb? No.
But I think he wants to make a keychain out of it.
There was a pause.
Sounds like he's suffered enough.
His voice sprang back to conversational like a leaf spring.
Hey, you say you'll pull for us down here in Austin to get one of those Doolittle reunions?
I'll do my best.
Well, that's all we can ask, isn't it?
I thanked him and hung up the phone. World War II fan.
What about Polk?
Dropped.
Cool.
She reached up and flipped some of the clothing in the bag. You going to escort Junior to the shower?
Unless you'd like the honor.
She pushed the bag at me again, but this time with a little more emphasis.
Ozzie's head remained down, but I suppose he felt as if he had to make some sort of effort at a conversation.
This is a nice jail, Walt.
I followed him down the steps.
We like it.
I used to come here when I was a teenager, when it was the old Carnegie Library. I don't think I've ever been down in this part.
Probably not.
We made the landing and turned the corner into something that looked like Johnny Weissmuller in Tarzan with Possession and Intent to Deliver. Santiago had arranged a number of event tables in the hallway, the day room, locker room, and all six of the regular cells. The Basco was standing in a day room with a clipboard and looked up as we stepped down.
483 plants in all.
Holy frijoles.
I ushered Ozzie over to the bathroom adjacent to the small locker area. It was a regular facility that had been converted by moving the wall and adding a metal one-piece shower stall. There was a single utility bulb, which was the only source of illumination other than a window near the ceiling.
I don't normally do this, but I'll close the door and give you a little privacy. Just get undressed and toss your old clothes out here, and I'll hand you the new stuff when you get through.
He nodded.
Did my mother bring toiletries and a bathrobe?
I looked in the bag.
Actually, she did.
I fished a very pricey, plushy, Navajo-patterned robe from the bag and handed it to him along with a leather valet case.
Here you go.
He disappeared into the bathroom without another word, and I closed the door behind him. Sancho came over with his clipboard.
What have we got?
It's up to you, boss, he shrugged. If it goes to the U.S. Attorney or the DEA, it means we lose jurisdiction, and it goes to Casper or Cheyenne. You want to go spend a week in Casper or Cheyenne testifying?
Not particularly.
I knocked on the door behind me.
Ozzy, you undressed yet?
His voice came through the door.
Yeah. You want to hand me your dirty clothes?
Okay.
The knob dutifully turned, and he handed me the wad of stained, filthy clothing.
Shoes?
After a second, they followed.
Can I have my other clothes? It's kind of cold in here.
You've got your bathrobe. I'll give you the clean ones after you shower.
The door hesitated and then closed. I threw the dirty clothes on the floor of the locker room and listened as the water in the shower stall came on. I turned back to Sancho.
So, we go local?
I don't think the feds would go for that. And besides, it might be hard on the county financially.
I attempted to be entrepreneurial.
Well, we do have a cash crop.
He ignored me and slid the clipboard under his arm.
What's Mr. Greenjean saying?
That he grew it for personal use.
The Basco looked around the room at the product, his dark eyes narrowing.
You're kidding?
He shook his head in disbelief. This is a high-profit, elevated narcotic value crop. Cinsimilla.
I had a hard-fought knowledge of drugs, but my education was full of holes.
How can you tell?
All female plants.
I'd say Duane's been hiding his light under a bush, so to speak. The cultivator has to be able to tell the male plants early in development and remove them, then by controlling the light regimen you hyperstimulate the female plants into producing buds.
He looked around at the jungle that surrounded us again.
Like these.
I was pleased that a little of the old light was back in Sancho's eyes.
It was possible that I could shut down the make-believe case of the missing thumb.
So what you're saying is that Duane's not just a pot grower, but the Johnny Appleseed of pot growers.
He's using advanced cloning techniques, root enhancement hormones, and a lot of other stuff I've never seen.
The water was still on in the shower.
Ozzy, are you all right in there?
His voice sounded over the noise in the metal stall.
Yes. Well, hurry it up. We've only got so much hot water in the building.
I turned back to the Basco. You don't think Duane's smart enough to do this on his own, do you?
I don't think he's smart enough to tip cows.
How about Gina? He leaned on the other bathroom door, facing.
Between the two of them, they might be able to tip cows. Boss, he was using high-intensity discharge lighting, industrial-grade humidifiers, ozone generators, and CO2 flow valves. There's about $150,000 worth of equipment alone down in that tunnel.
Couldn't he have used the profits from an earlier crop to purchase all this stuff?
He plucked the clipboard from under his arm, took a manila envelope from it, and handed it to me. Receipts for all the equipment from a botanical supply company in Miami, all bought at the same time, 6 months ago.
Why in the world would he keep the receipts for the equipment?
They were hanging on the wall in the tunnel, along with the warranties, all of them registered.
You're joking.
Nope. I guess he figured if something went wrong with the equipment. I pulled a few of the slips out and looked at the dates.
You think somebody fronted the entire operation?
It sure looks like it. The water continued to run in the bathroom, and I knocked on the door.
Ozzy?
It took a moment, but he responded.
Yes. Hustle it up.
I worked my way through the receipts. I had a nice visit with your wife and Antonio yesterday. I tried to make it as innocent a statement as I could, so I added, we had tea. He studied the concrete floor. I should have warned you. She likes tea. I stood there listening to Ozzy's shower. I don't think my son likes me. Once again, he didn't use the boy's name, but it was an opening that I wasn't about to let pass. Why is that?
He cries whenever I'm around.
I stuffed the receipts back in the envelope.
I wouldn't take it too seriously. Babies are odd that way and pick up all kinds of anxiety from their parents. A lot of times a stranger can hold them and they just stop crying. Maybe it's because it's someone different and they can sense that there are no expectations. I don't know. I'm not sure sometimes if my daughter likes me, and she's in her late 20s.
He nodded, but didn't say anything.
I offered you a raise.
He looked up. Through Marie?
Yep. How much?
Another $2,000 a year. He didn't seem all that impressed.
What did she say?
I allowed myself a smile.
She said she didn't do your thinking for you.
He laughed at that, and it was nice to see the old Sancho. I extended an arm and knocked again.
Ozzy?
No answer. The Besco and I exchanged a look.
Ozzy!
I turned the knob and swung the door wide to reveal an empty bathroom with the water still running in the shower and the tiny bathroom window open to the outside. You've got to be kidding. Chapter 9. It was the first time I'd